Hello, and welcome to Aspiration Athletics Podcast. I'm Devin Burnison, and in today's episode, I meet with guest speaker Joe Andrade, who is a former Olympic weightlifting competitor, a former professional baseball player, and a CrossFit coach. And we go through the experiences that Joe had throughout his upbringing, discussing some of the key traits that allowed him to be successful in his industry of business ownership, as well as excelling in professional baseball. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, bringing you episode 12. Hey, there we are.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, dude? Took us a minute. The app's a little tricky. It's still fairly new, so there's a lot of bugs to be meandered around, unfortunately.
Right.
Well, I'm going to start us off. This is Aspiration Athletics Podcast. I'm your host, Devin Burnison, and today we're bringing you your first live podcast interview with our guest speaker, Joe Andrade. Joe is the co-founder of Olympiadagear.com, and he's dabbled in professional sports, playing baseball. He played at a collegiate level as well, and is now dabbling into the Olympic lifting community, competing at a national level. And we're here to gain some insight about Joe's story and kind of how he dived into all of these endeavors, and kind of where he's at now and how he was able to progress throughout. So without further ado, our guest speaker, Joe.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Devin. Let's get started.
Yeah, man. So why don't we go from the start and begin with, kind of telling us who you are, where you're from, and then a little bit about yourself, and then we'll kind of go into how you got to where you're at, man.
Cool. All right. Well, my name's Joe, and I'm from Yuma, Arizona. Pretty small town out here in Arizona. It's about 5 minutes from the border. But I was just a little Mexican kid out here, just living the dream, playing baseball my whole life, and that's kind of what my life was about for like the first 20 years, from little league to high school, collegiate, so I was out here in Yuma playing baseball my whole life. And, it took me a lot of places, was able to connect with a lot of type of people in that type of community. And, I was a pretty competitive person. So that was kind of what drove me to becoming better at something and having a niche growing up. So,
yeah. So what age did you start playing ball then, Joe?
I was about 6 years old. I was playing here in the States and I was playing in Mexico.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
Yeah. I was going back and forth, just playing year round, playing in the most competitive places, Mexico is very competitive in baseball. So that was kind of the culture here. It's either you played baseball or you played soccer or wrestling. So,
yeah, and I think funny. We'll get into the wrestling side of things here soon, because I didn't know that background about you. And coming from a wrestling background myself, I can kind of see the build. I knew you had to have dabbled in it at some point. But why don't you walk me through kind of, the process when it came to baseball? This seems to be the first sport that you got involved in seriously. Am I right in saying so?
Yeah. Just kind of clear that up. I didn't wrestle. It was just the culture as far as kids doing something in the sports community here in Yuma, Arizona. So
gotcha.
You chose those three sports, but, baseball was my thing. So, started at a very young age and just loved it.
Yeah. So, baseball, did you start in, were you always from from Arizona rather, or did you travel from Mexico, or how did that work? 'Cause you said that you have, Mexican culture, correct?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the border from Yuma, Arizona is about 20 minutes. So you can go to Mexico pretty quickly. So that was kind of how it was. It was not even a way of just saying, oh, we're going to Mexico, we're going to travel. You know, it's like 20 minutes away. It's like our backyard out here. So,
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and talk about then when you first became serious in the sport, because you started at a younger age and you probably just enjoyed the leisure and competitive aspect of it. But let's kind of dive into, you know, when that transition of mentality happened, when you really started going after gold.
Well, for baseball, honestly, I was about 12, 13, and I was playing in Mexico, and I would play here in the States. It was more competitive in Mexico, and, you know, it was just that there was a time where I wasn't getting enough playing time, or I was always overlooked, and it kind of gave me that negative reinforcement to just really dive into it and just kind of prove it to myself that I can, you know, beat some people, you know. And once I transferred into my freshman year in high school, that's kind of when it all kicked in. You know, I played football for a year in high school, and then I just kind of decided that baseball was like something I really wanted to compete in, because in baseball you fail about 70% of the time as a player, and, you know, your success rate's around 30%. So that was kind of a challenge, you know, and a lot of people don't like it. You know, people quit. You know, at my age, it was somewhere where I was like, well, if I'm not going to get the playing time, you know, I'm gonna prove it to myself and to everyone around that's playing with me that, you know, that I'm good enough. So that was kind of my drive inside myself, you know, more, you know, intrapersonally. So started getting serious. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, I think a lot of people out there can relate to that fact of, like, the losing aspect of sport is hard to swallow as a young man. And it's one of those learning lessons. And you can either take that loss and quit the sport, or you can learn to grow and bear down and grind till you get better. And I think that it says something about your character, the pure fact that you chose a sport in which you're already failing 70% of the time. And what you recognized at a young age, and what I really like about your attitude, is you accept failure because you learn from your failures. You accept those losses because you learn from those losses. And I think that's so important for the listeners out there, because most people lose and they quit, right? Like, that's the common trend, and you were able to rise above that.
Right. Yeah, it's very common. So, you know, it's not for everybody, and that's okay. But, you know, completely different story, you know, and I know I'm not the only one out there. There's plenty of guys like me that, you know, accept that failure and just choose to swallow it and just keep knocking doors down.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what I mean. Attesting to your character is you just continue to knock barriers down, man. There's no excuses from you. And, you know, following your social media over the past year and a half that I've known you, you're constantly working to get better. And I think that's the whole point. Everybody out there listening is, you know, you dictate your success within any given field or any given sport. And it really is a matter of, you know, stick-to-itiveness and mental fortitude, but also work. You know, you got to put in the work to get better. And that's what we're highlighting in today's show with having our guest speaker, Olympiada Joe, here. So why don't you go ahead and tell me about coming up in baseball? You know, you obviously did really well in high school, enough to compete in college. Why don't we talk about that transition from high school level baseball and athletics into now the collegiate realm?
Oh, okay. So in high school, you know, this is kind of how it works. So when you're in high school, you move on to college. Typically, when you get to your college team, you're probably the best player in your town, you know? So it's like you show up, hey, I'm the best player that came out of my town, you know, and so forth. Everybody on your team is the best player that came out of where they lived at. So that's kind of how it goes once you move up levels, whether it's junior college, you know, Division I baseball, into a professional level. You know, it just gets more in depth. So transitioning, it was pretty fun. You know, everybody there has a chip on their shoulder. When you show up to college baseball, everybody's fired up. And, you know, I've had some quite experiences with being a starter in the collegiate level. You know, it was tough. You know, it wasn't a time where you could just kind of be complacent. You actually have to try even harder, because the higher the level you go, you know, the harder it is, the smaller the window of success is.
And, oh, exactly.
The more focus you really have to put into it. So, you know, as far as like being a student athlete, you know, you have to focus on school, get enough sleep, live a little bit of a social life in the college life, and, you know, be successful on the field. So, you know, it was a lot of things you had to put together and, you know, stay above water. So,
yeah. So let's talk about that, because I know, you know, myself coming from Eastern Michigan University, I know that there's a ton of athletes that I, you know, talk with and create dialogue with that seem to struggle keeping that balance between that role constraint of having to wear a student hat as well as an athlete hat, and optimizing both of those ventures rather than just pouring their energy into one and the other. So let's kind of talk about that balance that you had to find within your education as well as baseball and sport.
Well, number one is priority. So you're going to prioritize school first, obviously, because if you don't go to school, you're not going to play. So that's number one. That's pretty simple. You just show up to class, just go to school.
Right.
And, you know, you're already halfway there. You're probably going to pass, you know, if you just show up and, you know, pay attention a little bit, you know, get it done. So that ensures your eligibility to actually play. So after that, you know, then you just focus on, you know, your sport, you know. So it's just a matter of prioritizing those things and just kind of going from there. You know, I didn't really plan it or put it on paper, but that's kind of how I had it in my head, you know, where I had to go to school, prioritize that, you know, and then play baseball, you know, and make sure I took care of myself.
So in a way, what I'm hearing you say is you kind of took this this approach of recognizing priorities, and I think this is why I want to highlight it, is because a lot of people get so caught up with their role constraint and kind of having to wear all of those hats, they get so worked up about the lack of time they have throughout the day. And I want to highlight this, because this is something a lot of people lack, is this balance between work and life and sport and leisure. What it comes down to, folks, and what Joe's describing is a sliding scale. You either have time and money, or you have no time and plenty of money. It's kind of like that analogy, you know? So like prioritizing within that given time frame for you, being an undergraduate, being a college athlete, you had to prioritize what was going to be the best route for you in that given point in time. And knowing that, you know, athletics was keeping you on some sort of scholarship that was affiliating you to that university, you knew that you had to prioritize your education as well as perform on the field. And I want to relate that. Yeah, exactly. And I want to relate that to every one of our listeners out there, is you have priorities on your own, you know, and whether you're involved in athletics or you're running a business or you're simply a student, those are your priorities. So if you aren't prioritizing those things to optimize them at the most that you can, you're not going to see the best results, and you're certainly not going to make it to a professional level like Joe did. And that's what I want to highlight about you, brother, is, you know, throughout this endeavor, it sounds like you learned very early on how to organize your time and how to find that balance between, you know, work, life and social endeavors and still being able to enjoy the process along with it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, baseball was everything, dude. It was just like, it was my getaway. So, you know, that's kind of how I had to learn a little bit earlier. You know, everybody has struggles in their life. You know, I didn't live the easiest life. You know, I had problems at home, crazy stuff, you know, and that was kind of, baseball was kind of the thing that, you know, that put light into my life where, you know, I knew that this was something I could control, you know, the best way possible. So,
and that's another thing too, is what I hear that as is you exercise your strengths in order to manifest your path in life, right? Like you didn't recognize that, okay, you know, I'm playing baseball at the moment, I'm going to switch my major into such and such so I can try to get ahead in this field. No, you realized that you liked baseball and you liked the athletic side of things about baseball, and you ran with your strengths and allowed you to acquire a scholarship.
Oh, shit, yeah, man. It was kind of like everything I did, I revolved it around baseball. So if it didn't fit the baseball schedule or, you know, or the major couldn't translate over for me to play on the field, you know, I would do anything I can to keep playing, you know. So that's kind of how I took it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, let's go ahead and start to transition into, you know, you're obviously competing at a college level. You're going through some successful seasons. Let's talk about that transition into, you know, professional ball. How did that happen? Let's dive into that.
Well, it was kind of weird. As I transferred as a JUCO player, I was going to go Division I. It's kind of how – it's crazy how life works, but I was going to go Division I. I was going to play for University of Arizona. Something happened with one of my credits to transfer over, and my eligibility wasn't there anymore. So I had to contact schools that I had turned down, and I ended up going to Dixie State University, and that was probably the best decision I ever made. And you know, it was a great school. I had great coaches. They really vouched for me on everything, you know, and as far as like being communication with like the MLB Bureau, you know, contacts with actual professional scouts, you know. So it wasn't just being a player that can take care of business off the field, you know, have a good relationship with team rapport, you know, taking care of all those tools as a player, you know. It wasn't just that, you know, you have to have a little bit of help with those coaches, you know. And going to Dixie State was probably the best thing as far as me getting to the next level.
I want to kind of pause there and talk about your experience with coaches and highlight this point. You know, Joe talks about the kind of struggles that are coming from a bigger university being that they can't create that type of interpersonal connection a lot of the time with tons of athletes maybe on the roster for that team in Arizona. But then, you know, this kind of blessing in disguise happened where you were able to still fulfill your sport at Dixie State University and Dixie State College and be able to continue to play, but also have that benefit of now you have coaches that are working for you and working to help support you to get to that next level. And I think that's the most important piece that I want to highlight here is it doesn't necessarily matter the institution or university that you become affiliated with. It's the quality of the coaches. It's the amount that they're willing to invest in you, because ultimately that big name coming from University of Michigan or Arizona or, you know, any of these other larger universities, yeah, you're getting that name brand, that that brand awareness. However, you need people that are going to support your ventures. And as an individual, it sounds like that's what you were able to find at Dixie State, right?
Yes, definitely. Because there's an old saying, you know, in baseball, it's like, it doesn't matter where you play, where you're coming out of, you know, there's always somebody watching, you know, all you need is an opportunity and, you know, you need a little bit of luck on your side, you know, next thing you know, you're in the right place at the right time. So, that's kind of how it fit for me, and I couldn't have had the best last 2 years of my college career. You know, I was, I think the last year at Dixie, I was like, I was the NCAA hitter of the week for, I was hitting about like almost 800.
Oh my gosh. Wow, dude.
It was wild. Yeah. We're playing against Grand Canyon. I'll tell you, I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday, but we're playing Grand Canyon. I ended up going like 12 for 15 in a 4-game series.
Wow.
Yeah. And I did real well. And it was just kind of like a domino effect from there. You know, I started off hot my last year and then I just kept going. So finished off at Dixie, you know, I was athlete of the year there, which was weird for me. I never really get awards. So I was athlete of the year there. And
that's,
in my region.
That's awesome. Wow. Holy crap. So athlete of the year coming from, and this is just phenomenal to me. And I want to highlight this again for some people that are just tuning in. So, you know, Mr. Joe here coming from Arizona, you know, playing baseball, transcript issues, credit issues, all of these things transferring led him to Dixie State University. And from there, you had the support from your coaches. You found a team of people that are willing to work for you and hold each other accountable. And I think that that's the most important piece that allowed you to grow. And since then, it allowed you to be able to perform at such a higher level and really find your stride and build that intrinsic motivation and that confidence to execute. And now you're, you at the time you had been player of the week deemed as after hitting nearly 800. I mean, that's crazy, dude.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really a coming of age story.
Yeah, that was the first month of the season for and you know, I was hitting however, I would think it was like 7 and some change, but yeah, it's just honestly it's all about that confidence you do build, but you build
exactly right. It's up to you to build it. It's up to you to foster that confidence yourself. Confidence comes from within, ladies and gentlemen, and that's that aspect of intrinsic motivation that I talk about. You know, if you aren't confident in your abilities, you won't execute. It's mind over matter, truly. And that's really what we've highlighted here is that you had that ability to see the bigger picture, even in spite of some of the things that were going maybe not in your way at the time. You were able to still see that silver lining at the end of the tunnel that allowed you to ultimately perform at a higher level and gain that confidence necessary in yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely something you savor in baseball because – you know, you can have confidence, you know, and the next thing you know, your last at bat during a game, you know, it all goes away. Then, you know, the next thing is like your next 4 games, you just suck ass and you go 0-10 because you mind screw yourself. You know, that's just the game of baseball, you know, that confidence just comes and goes. And, you know, it stuck around for the whole season. So I was pretty fortunate to keep that. But that's kind of how you get hot in baseball. You know, you build that confidence and, you know, you really savor it for sure because, you know, it doesn't last very long. That's just how
right.
Baseball
and,
is.
And even talking about this aspect of, you know, you're hot on a streak and all of the sudden you know, you're really hot and you're getting these great numbers. And then all of a sudden you may have a streak where you're playing like shit. And you know what? That's going to happen. That's going to happen. And what I love, and this is where you find the content of your character, folks, is as an athlete, especially in baseball, where you can have so many games where you're just not playing your best and you know you're talented, it's being able to not take it personal and being able to rise up to the occasion each and every game and almost dusting that off your shoulder, right? Like being able to bounce back after a shit game and then go and perform optimally in the next. Like a lot of that is mental, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's called there's certain tactics they teach you in baseball. I mean, if you got good coaches or good mentors, but you know, you learn to have short-term memory and not hold grudges on your past experiences, you know. So those are kind of life lessons you can hold for yourself for anything outside of baseball too, you know. So you learn a lot in baseball that you can translate over to your daily life, you know, and short-term memory was one of them that I carried over, you know. It's just not to hold grudges, you know, let things go, you know, forget it. And, you know, that's kind of what I learned in order to succeed from my failures is you just, okay, fuck it. You know, I went over.
Exactly. Having that mentality to be able to brush it off your shoulder is imperative to be able to perform optimally in the next game. Because, I mean, you look at positions in football like quarterback where, you know, they're dictating the whole offense and the scheme and how it's run. And you can see the look on a lot of those quarterbacks' faces after an interception or a play that they failed to execute properly on. You know, they're disappointed, and it carries over in the rest of the game. And you notice in the quarterbacks that are the absolute greatest, your Drew Brees, your Peyton Mannings of the world, they're able to snap out of that, right? They're able to snap out of that mentality as quickly as possible, and then it's a whole new play. It's still 0-0.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I was a catcher, so I kind of know that how that feels. You know, there's so much responsibility, so you just got to, you know, stay on top of things. And, you know, from a quarterback's point of view to a catcher's point of view in baseball, you know, you literally have to be about 10 steps ahead of everybody. So that's kind of how you live.
Right. And I think that especially going off of that, you know, 10 steps ahead, it's like a chess game. You know, you got to be able to predict what your opponents are going to do. And sometimes you're able to have that foreshadowing or intuition that allows you to make the right audible or allows you to make the right correction call on, you know, when you're communicating with your pitcher. Like all of those things, it's so important, though, to first facilitate and foster that calm mindset and confidence ultimately, because if you aren't confident in anything, you're not going to execute properly. And I think that's probably one of the biggest takeaways that seems to have molded your character the most from this sport is that, you know, you learn from your losses. That's a big one. And you brush off your losses. Like you don't take it into your next venture, assuming you're going to fail because you have in the past.
Yeah. It's called your fifth tool. So in baseball, you have five tools, you know. I'm not going to go into the other ones, you know, like arm strength, speed, whatever. But the fifth tool is called makeup, you know, and that's more of your mental state. It's more of your demeanor, how you hold yourself, you know, how coaches and your teammates can expect what they expect out of you, you know. And you hold that as far as your fifth tool, which is your makeup, you know. How good you are with people, do you communicate, you know, those little things is what makes up the fifth tool in baseball. And that's something that I really did dive into because I wasn't very good at that fifth tool, you know, that communicating, being more selfless, you know, and trying to help your teammates. And, you know, there's so many things you can go into, but you know, that's something I really worked on was that fifth tool. Cause that's either a make or break thing, you know, cause if you want to play into the next level, they look at that fifth tool, you know, we're like, oh, how's this guy in school? You know, how's his record? You know, how is he with his coaches? You know, do his teammates like him? Oh no, that guy's a piece of shit. Even though he's really good, he sucks. He's just an asshole to everybody. Okay. They scratch you off the list. You know, it's just, it could be that one thing scouts don't like, and that's 9 times out of 10 it's the makeup. You know, you got to be a player that can play with other players. You know, if you're not somebody that people can enjoy you, you know, being around you and feed off of your the way you play and the way you act, you know, you're not going to play very long. So, and that's in anything, in any sport, even in work. You know, if you're not somebody people don't like to be around, you know, then they're going to say, hey, fuck this guy. This guy, we can't work with this guy, you know, and that goes in life. So
I couldn't agree more, and I couldn't have said it better myself, Joe. And I want to highlight that point because it is so powerful, and that is the message is, you know, we're relating these things in an analogous way to athletics and sport, but this really is applicable to life, ladies and gentlemen. If you can't work together on a team to accomplish a common goal, and if you can't coexist with other people around you and operate as a team, when you operate as a team, you're able to accomplish so much more. And I love that you highlighted that point, is that you have to be able to coexist and you have to be able to communicate properly with your teammates and to be able to find that common ground so that you can execute together properly and win, you know, ultimately.
Right. So diving into, you know, the professional level, you know, it's next level. Nobody knows, you know, as a fresh body playing pro, you don't really know what to expect, or, you know, you have to really learn fast. So, I had to learn pretty damn quickly. So it was fun. A lot of ups and downs, but, I was predicted, to get drafted in the 24th round. I was one of the best catchers in the West Side of the U.S. for just kind of like projectability. So I was at home listening to the draft, you know, at round after round. I got calls from a bunch of teams, like, asking me if I was ready to go. Comes the 40th round, I don't get a call, man.
No way.
It was probably the hardest thing I had to fucking swallow, but it happened. So this is kind of how my career started, is I didn't get in the draft. Next day I got called by one of my MLB bureau guys who was taking care of me most of my college season. And he was just as shocked as I was. So he called me within a couple of days, and he got Milwaukee on the line. He's like, "Hey, dude, these guys, you know, I'm going to get you to play somewhere, you know." So he's like, "Just stay ready, you know." So those few days went by, and I got a call, and Milwaukee literally just signed me on the spot. So I packed my bags within 2 days, went to Phoenix, and I was ready to go. It was like, it happened so fucking fast. Getting cleared and all the processes of being able to play on the field as a professional, you know, it's freaking wild, man. It's kind of hard to explain.
I can't imagine, dude. I've never done anything at a professional level, and the most that I've ever competed at was national competition regarding wrestling, and that was not even close to filling the stands of thousands of individuals on a professional level. And I just can't imagine. And that's why I'm so like enthralled by your experience and your story, is because you've seen all, I mean, you're really a self-made dude, and that's what I respect about you. You know, you may not have had the best influences coming up, and you may have had a harder upbringing, but you always trusted the bigger picture. And I think the most important piece of it is you've always trusted yourself and your abilities. Like, throughout all of this story and throughout recapping all of this, the last thing that I expect you to say is that, yeah, I gave up. And like, it shows, because you just kept fighting and you kept going. And even after, you know, not making that draft initially, you could have very easily said, "Well, this isn't for me, and I guess I'll figure something else out." But you accepted, you didn't accept no as an answer, you know, and you continued to progress forward, and now you're at Milwaukee. Let's talk about what happens from there.
So I get cleared. You know, kind of like earlier, I was saying that when you go from high school to college, you're basically the best player that came out of your town, you know? So you go from college to pro, it's either, "Oh, I was the best player out of my school. I was the best player out of my region. Hey, I'm the best player that came out of my country." Like, I'm playing against the best players in the freaking world. So, yeah, it was shocking, but, you know, as a professional, everybody at that level somewhat thinks the same as far as that competitive edge, and everybody holds himself high. So it was kind of easy, kind of going through the day, but it seemed a little slower as you would go to your practice, do your training, go to the games where they felt really, really slow. It wasn't like hyped up like college. You know, you had to hold yourself like a pro, like you're a professional, act like a professional. So there was a lot of unwritten rules you had to learn in order for, you know, you to kind of be more successful with your makeup. So that fifth tool. Now you have to add, okay, I got to look like a professional. I have to show up to work. Okay, it's a job. Okay, I got to show up to the field dressed up nice. You know, I got to do things the right way. I got to talk to people a little bit different that are higher in chain of command, I guess you could say. You know, so it wasn't like walking on eggshells. You just had to learn faster on that part of being a professional. You know, you're no longer a honey badger, you know, just grinding in college, you know, or playing in your country in Venezuela trying to make a pro team. So you got to really learn how to be a pro. So that was one of the hardest things.
Talk to me about that demeanor. Like, what was the mentality like? Because I can't imagine that transition from collegiate to now professional ball, and you're coming in as like a younger rookie. Like, talk to me about that transition. What was the climate like? What was being around this environment of the best players, the best athletes in the world? Talk to me about kind of how you had to carry yourself throughout all of this.
So the way I took it is, everywhere you go, you know, there's guys that are hurt. You know, you got big league dudes that are playing with you because they're on the disabled list or something, or in rehab. So my idea was, all right, I'm going to see what these guys do, and I'm going to do exactly what they do. You know, because you had guys fresh out of high school that signed, and you got college players like myself, you know. So the college players are a little bit more mature, you know, they're a little bit more adulty, I guess you could say. But then you got the rookie high school kids that are, you know, wild, acting like dummies, you know. And it's normal, you know, they're kids. They're real freak. They're 18 years old. So it's like, you know, you can't expect less or more, I guess you could say. So my tactic was just to see what the big leaguers that I would watch in the clubhouse do, and I would just do what they do. So or I would ask questions. I would ask the veteran guys, like, hey, what do I do here? Like, hey, am I allowed to do this? Or what's going, like, just kind of questions like that. I would pick people's brains, you know, but I wouldn't be that kind of dude who just asked too many questions, because then that's something you don't do, you know. It's kind of crazy.
Right. You want to, I was always told, you know, at least look like you know what you're doing. And
Exactly.
Yeah. And not to create a posture of like, oh, I'm all knowing and like, fake it till you make it. Not like that, but have an idea, carry yourself like you are the professional that you are, because you obviously made it to that point for a reason. But I want to talk again about the other influences. You explained this contrast of some of the younger players acting like kids and just kind of being, you know, their age. And that's acceptable, and that's what's expected. Talk to me about these older players. Clearly, you gravitated more towards the adult players and some of the more mature players. Now, that was obviously because you could recognize that they had been mature in the sport and had enough of experience to make it to that level and excel. What else were you thinking in that time besides improving your game from talking with some of these older guys?
Well, actually, before I actually showed up to Phoenix, to our spring training facility, I actually had a mentor, or I had some mentors, and I actually knew a couple big leaguers already that I had trained sometimes back home here. And, you know, I'm not going to name names, but he was a catcher, you know, big league guy for the Giants. And, you know, I had old coaches that were in high school that used to play pro too. So they would tell me things on how to kind of do stuff, you know. So I kind of had a little bit of knowledge. But one guy when I was actually in pro ball was, I think it was Chris. I think he's Chris Davis. I can't remember. He's he plays for the Oakland Athletics now as a left fielder. But he was on the DL, and I would watch this guy. And this guy had just a huge chip on his shoulder and respected everybody, you know, kind of kept to himself, you know, and wasn't too bubbly. So I kind of try to act that way. Okay, I'm just going to keep to myself a little bit, but still talk to people, you know, talk to my teammates and stuff. It's pretty hard to explain, honestly. You just got to create your own path, I guess you could say. So I try not to take too much of everybody. And just kind of try to create something so people could recognize me for me, you know?
Not just I love that about you because it's super organic. And I think a lot of people are so used to seeing on social media, like, just an individual who carries themselves, that they're all-knowing and that they have everything under control and that everything's working in their favor. And that's never the case, especially when we look at successful people and those that are competing at a high level. Like, we all just assume that it's super easy, and we all assume that at that point, you know, you're taken care of and the work stops. And people don't understand that professional athletes are working just as hard, if not harder, than the rest of the people in society that are clocking in and out. Like, there essentially is no downtime as a professional athlete, I'd imagine. You're constantly trying to learn, whether it's physical or mental, the ins and outs of the game, right?
Yeah, I mean, one, you know, baseball players in the minor leagues, you know, they don't get paid enough, you know, so that's one. You know, so that's kind of like a shitty part of being a professional. Is like, in baseball, you just don't get – there's so many levels to get to the big leagues, you know, so many players. You know, there's just so many things, and you're playing 162 games a season. So, you know, that's double what other sports play. So it's – you're playing a lot every day. So I'll break it down to you as far as how a day's worth of a baseball player is. So – you show up about, what, 10 o'clock. You show up early, you do a little pregame spread. Not pregame spread, sorry. It's like a morning meal. You go take some extra hacks in the cage. You know, you do that type of stuff. You do your individual work in the field with your team. You do your team stretching. You know, so you're having a little bit of a practice from about 11 to about 1 or 2. Then for me, I would catch bullpens for players that needed some extra reps in. So by that time, it's about 4 o'clock. You go back to the locker room. You have your pregame spread, you know, your lunch. You do that, hang out in the locker room till about 7 o'clock, you know, before game time. You're just shooting the shit, playing ping pong, cutting your teammates' hair. You know, just hanging out, you know, talking on the phone with your family, just hanging out, and then play your game. By the time the game's done, it's 11 o'clock, you know, shower, eat your dinner. By the time you leave, it's almost midnight, you know, so you get home. Sometimes you decide, hey, I'm going to go out with the team. You know, we're going to go out to a bar. You know, next, you know, it's 3 in the morning, you get home, wake up the next day, do it over again. So, that's kind of how it is in pro ball. You know, that's somewhat of the routine. So it's more than 12 hours a day that you're putting in work. So,
wow. So it's basically rinse and repeat at that point. You're just kind of going through this process of you hurry up to wait till you play. And of course you're warming up a couple hours before then, but for the most part, your time is delegated towards being with that team, being around each other, and mentally preparing for the game at hand.
Yeah, you get 2 days off every 2 weeks, I think. I think that's how it was. Yeah, you get maybe one. You know, it's just because there's just so many games. You know, and the hard part is when you do commute games, you know, you got to get to a to the field. I mean, I played in Brevard County, so I played for the Florida State League. And we would go play Daytona. I was living in Brevard County, so that's about an hour away from Daytona. So we'd play the Cubs, you know, and then we'd have to commute back. So say by the end of the game, it's midnight. You're driving back home on the bus. By the time you get back, it's about 1:30, you know. So, you know, it varies as far as the time that you have to work. So it's definitely a freaking grind, and it's an understatement. You know, people don't understand, you know, and it's funny when people ask you, it's like, hey, did you play pro? Yeah, I played minor league ball, you know, and they're like, oh, but did you play pro? And I'm like, you're a professional athlete, you know, whether it's big leagues or minor leagues, you know, it's the same thing. You're still considered
people,
a professional
people don't
athlete.
Understand. People don't really understand that as well. And they look at the players that are playing and starting, and they just assume that, okay, you know, these people went to college, they came here. They don't understand the process involved. They don't understand that these players are the absolute best in the world, and it's the cream of the crop, you know? And, these are people that most of the time aren't your fresh off the college grad or undergrad, you know, to 18, 20 years old that are starting. It's usually your 24s, 26s, and 28 year olds that are getting the limelight because they've had some time in that sport.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a little different, you know. People just don't understand. You got to really live that, you know, and it's different for everybody. Even if when you're a professional, you know, you could be a high paid player, you know, you're going to get more opportunities to fail, you know, and if you don't get paid as much as far as you're signing, how much you sign for, you know, you get a smaller opportunity, you know, so it's like your window of success. You see, you get an opportunity, you better freaking, you better execute. If not, man, you know, the organization keeps tabs on all that type of stuff. So you really have to keep your head down, work, and just focus with every opportunity you get. So.
Well said, yeah. Well said. And I couldn't agree more, man. So we talked about your kind of coming up through, you know, as a child playing baseball, and you fell in love with it, and you excelled and got to a collegiate level, had a pretty successful career at collegiate level, and then made it to the professional level and competed in minor leagues for Milwaukee. Now let's talk about, walk me through, basically we got a whole nother life to address for you. This is business ownership. And this is where I become intrigued as someone who's a business person, as well as a coach and an athlete themselves. Let's talk about how someone like you, an athlete who's just bred to compete and has this just ferocious attack on their competitive drive. Talk to me about how that translated into a business venture.
Well, it just happened, really. So I finished playing. My best friend, he kind of watched over me as – he was a businessman, so he was one of my teammates back in college, you know. So his route was business, so he had a couple things cooking up in Vegas. So when I finished playing pro ball, you know, he asked me, hey, move to Vegas, and we'll make some business moves, some business opportunities, you know, and just, you know, make something of ourselves and another chapter of our lives. So I moved out there, and you know, we started little things, selling things here and there online, and, you know, built some overhead. And he was kind of a mentor of mine. You know, he was teaching me a lot of this stuff that I didn't know. And long story short, you know, we kind of had a seat in his room one day, and we're like, hey, let's start something with that can represent who we are. Kind of like a legacy type of thing. So we started Olympiada, you know, and we're like, shoot, let's do it. So, you know, he kind of thought, well, I'm the business guy, you know, you're the kind of athlete dude, you know, you can be the face of the product, and let's promote it and you know, have different jobs and just grow this thing. So I was like, well, if we're going to start something in the fitness industry, I better fucking do something that's going to prove that this shit works. So I was doing kind of CrossFit type of stuff, you know, during and after baseball. So I became a coach in CrossFit. I started doing CrossFit workouts and trying to be good at it. So that's kind of how I cross marketed the brand to grow, is that I made myself that product to show people, hey, I do this stuff, it works, wear it. And we've been growing it for the last 5 years. So I went from CrossFit to just teaching it to personal clients to now just competing in USA weightlifting.
Yeah. So I want to, I want to highlight all of those points because, you know, here you are as someone who's fresh off of this professional baseball venture, and you're, a lot of athletes run into this and they don't prepare for it, as it's like that life after sport, you know, and a lot of athletes get caught up in, well, what do I do after? Because I've predicated my whole life on building myself to compete at the highest level. What do I do next? And this point in your life, you had a great support system, being of which you had a friend who had a different set of skills that you could learn from. And it sounds like you two collaborated together, right? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, definitely.
So you two collaborated together, and he was able to give you insight on maybe some business incentives, some business strategies, and ultimately to create this legacy like you're talking about. You didn't want baseball to be what you left behind and be the only thing you left behind. Now it was time to make your mark and reinvent yourself in a different way. And you meet with what was his name, by the way? We want to give him some credit here.
My best friend?
Yeah.
It's Justin.
So Justin, you meet with Justin, and you and Justin start talking, and the idea of this this Olympiada product starts to arise. So I guess talk to me about the advantages of being a pro athlete and being able to get this company and this product off the ground, because it's doing really well. And for those of you that haven't tried the product yet, you know, they're producing wrist wraps, they're producing athleisure wear, they're producing, you know, all of these safety equipment for gym and leisure equipment for gym, and just really fashionable and sturdy and durable pieces of equipment to help you execute your dynamic barbell movements, whether you're a power lifter, Olympic lifter, or bodybuilder. You know, they have the answer for all of those things. And, you know, just kind of talk me through, you know, that whole experience and being able to connect with Justin and how you guys came up with this product. I mean, you came from a baseball scene, so let's talk about where this weightlifting aspect of these products came from.
Well, I mean, when you're a baseball player, you're pretty good at speaking. So, I don't know, that's just a thing. So, I mean, you're a natural salesman, so that kind of came easy. Baseball's failure. So when I got into USA weightlifting, you fail. So it was not very far from my experiences, so it was really easy to adjust. And that was kind of my cushion, so, or my safety net that just kind of caught me to transfer over to something else with my competitive edge. So it was weightlifting that kind of just answered to that. And, you know, it couldn't have fallen into a better place. So, but with Olympiada, we literally just, we started with wrist wraps, you know, and went from there. And as we kept selling stuff on, I mean, we're on Amazon, Walmart.com, Groupon, Tiger Fitness, you know, all that stuff grew over time, but, you know, we're selling stuff online, you know, doing face-to-face communication with other people in gyms. So I would take gym equipment to the gyms that I'd go to, and I'd show people, literally just show people. And I couldn't even count how many gyms I've been to just to work out and show people what I have, you know? So
So I love that aspect, because a lot of people assume that they can just start a company or start a brand and everyone's going to jump behind it. And I think that it should go without saying, but rather it doesn't. You have to put in the ground and legwork, right? Like, you couldn't just rely on your experience as a professional athlete. You knew that you had to go and showcase these products and show the individual behind it and how this product works and the efficiency. You were your own salesman, and you were on foot, almost door to door in a sense. And I think that's so important for everybody to hear, is like, you, just because Joe was a professional athlete didn't make him egotistical in this pursuit and getting cocky about his status, because he went out and was interpersonally connecting with each person he was trying to get to inform them about these products. And I think that that's so beautiful for people to understand, especially in this realm of kind of entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurship's becoming really popular nowadays, and people are kind of, you know, trying this pursuit as an entrepreneur so often now, because it's become like this fad thing. So everyone's trying to make t-shirts, and everyone's trying to posture up like they're a salesman, and they're not doing the work. And I think that's where you were able to see success, is not only were you a gifted athlete, but you didn't just let that be the reason why it excelled. You were able to sell that product and get people to believe in the brand.
Yeah. And it's not just kind of believing, or people saying, like, in business, oh, you got to build customer service and stuff like that. You know, to me and my partner Justin, you know, we say fuck all that. You know, it's not just customer service, you know, it's all about loyalty, you know, and that's how you build it. You know, you build the relationships, friendships, you know, build the bridges, but you actually show people what the fuck you do, and you show that it works, and you help people. You know, that's how you build loyalty. So that's how you're able to do it. A lot of brands don't do that. A lot of them just pay a shit ton of money for online marketing, and they try to, you know, do it that route. And next thing you know, they're in and out in 1 or 2 years. And you're like, where the fuck did this brand come from? You know, and where did they go? You know, they're missing. You know, and I can name a few fucking brands that did that, you know, but I'm not going to say anything. It's just funny that that's how it happens. You know, you got to put the legwork, you know, literally the legwork, you know. And what I did was, I'd go to gyms and I'm like, hey man, can I work out here for a day, or just train, hang out with everybody in the gym? And they would see my lifts, and I'd fucking try to lift heavy shit, and then I'd show them what I have. I'm like, hey, this is what I got, this is my brand, check us out, you know, check the social media out, this is what we do, so you could see what we have, yada yada yada. And that's how you build relationships. So you have to do it in that way. I feel like that's the best way that worked for me. So,
yeah. And I think that's really cool. Like, you did this aspect of like traveling to the gym and really putting in that legwork of, okay, I'm going to come here and then build rapport with everyone in the gym and try to bring attention and awareness to me and my product, because you are the product. And, you were just killing these lifts, right? And like showing your athletic proficiency and all of your development as an athlete and your knowledge as a CrossFit coach, as well as showcasing your brand with it. And I think people start to connect the brand with the individual. And that's why it's so important for you to do that groundwork, because now they're connecting Olympiada with Joe, you know. And I think that when they make that connection, they're able to see, okay, this is the values that this person has as an individual, you, and right, this is the values the company has or the brand has. And it's interchangeable, because you're showing the core values of your brand through your morals and values yourself as an individual. So that allowed you to really make some ground and headway in the industry and, bring your brand up to where it is now. And for those people that that are curious about the brand or curious about the products, You can definitely check out in the show notes after. We'll have a special code for you to use to get 20% off your next order. And that'll be special to Aspiration Athletics Podcast only. So you guys can reap the benefits there if you use the promo code below in the show notes. That's Aspiration with a capital A, 18. So you can get 20% off your next order when you order with that promo code. But going back to this this product of yours, you know, I'm really intrigued by how well it took off, and it shows why it did is because you and many others, and we'll get into that in a second. You and in this community that you've built around the brand have really allowed people, or really allowed this outreach type of incentive to happen, where you're able to kind of facilitate this community where people are excited about your products.
Yeah, I give everybody opportunities. So, like, I mean, I talk to hundreds of people a day on social media, you know, on Instagram and stuff like that. And, you know, I give everybody an opportunity to become part of Olympiada, you know. And to me, it's not like, hey, I'm going to get this super highlighted person that everybody knows. No, fuck that. You know, I'd rather give it to somebody, you know, give an opportunity to somebody who's just a regular gym goer, you know, because I feel like that's an untapped market where these people are trying to come up and try and make something of themselves. I'm like, well, why not give these people an opportunity, you know, have them try to jump on board and, you know, build some confidence that way, you know? So I do that too. And that's worked as well, you know, and that builds loyalty, you know, people see that, you know, like, hey, why are you picking me? I'm just a regular Joe Blow. Like, I don't care, man. You put in work. I see what you do online. You know, you're posting all kinds of stuff. Why not? You know, you're someone just like me. So I don't see myself anywhere different than anyone else that goes to the gym. You know, I just snatch, clean, and jerk.
That's what I really liked about you from the get-go, Joe. We've talked a few times over the course of the last 2 years, I want to say, because I've been an avid weightlifter and dabbling into the sports performance as well as Olympic weightlifting side of training and mode of training. So when I first began my journey, you know, as someone who really wasn't anything to begin with, I was just coming out of bodybuilding and I was looking to improve my athleticism, and I'm seeing your videos and I'm seeing all the content you put out, and you're just a hell of an athlete and you're moving so fluid and everything's so clean. And your lifts are just at the most elite level I've ever been able to see. So I really, when you talk about going back to when your time in baseball, how you were talking with some of those older guys and just asking questions and becoming a sponge, I found myself doing the same thing with you. And this is why I love your character, man, is I can see a lot of likeness between us, is I'm the same way. I'm willing to learn and take skills from individuals who have them, rather than point fingers and blame people why I'm not where I should be. I listen to everyone who has value to offer, and you were one of them. And I reached out to you, and this is going back to your brand. You weren't this hoity-toity, you know, hard ass that's like, hey, you don't have enough followers, I'm not going to engage with you, or you don't have enough of a presence, I don't want to talk to you. Dude, you reached out immediately and you gave me feedback on my lifts, and you were very constructive in doing so, and it's really helped me get to the point where I'm at today. And like I said, I model my lifts after you, and I really check your form and I check all of your mechanics and try to implement those into my training as well. And so far it's paid dividends. So I just want to go back to that main point and create this dialogue where the idea here is, folks, you treat everyone the way you want to be treated. And I think Joe has showcased that exceptionally well, giving everyone the opportunity to be a part of this community of Olympiada gear, as well as being a part of the weightlifting community and having everyone feel comfortable about, you know, diving into their fitness journey, whatever level they're at. And you've done that so well, buddy. And that's why I wanted you to be on this show, is because you are a model for those that are looking to take it to the next level, myself included. And you inspire a lot of people, and you never know where these people may end up. Myself, I started a company and I've started podcast channels, and you know, now I'm showcasing and giving back to the community, much like you have. And that's the whole point, right? Each one teach one. We bring each other up.
Of course, man. That's huge. I think that's, I don't know, I'm a person that serves, man. So like, I don't know, I love to give people stuff, you know, help out any way I can, you know, be a service to people. So I find more enjoyment in that, you know, than taking. So that's just what I do. It just comes natural. I don't know. It's just the way I am. It's the way I was brought up. So, yeah, I mean, I do appreciate that I've helped you. I mean, as far as, you know, your mechanics and lifting and stuff like that, you know, so I guess it's working, you know.
Oh, it's paying people. Dividends, man. And you're helping out a lot of people with your reach, and just creating awareness with this brand and creating awareness to who you are as a person. But we're getting low on time. I want to give you a chance to share your media handles, because I want all of our listeners to tune into your posts and tune into a lot of the projects that you're getting started on, and as well as take advantage of some of these deals on your product.
Yeah. My Instagram handle is Olympiada Joe. So Olympiada Joe. So it's, you can check out my page. I have a couple discounts there. A few other companies I do kind of promote. You know, if you just follow me, I'll be posting a bunch of stuff. So if you guys have any questions or anything, you know, just make sure you reach out to me and say that, hey, heard you on the podcast, you know, and if you want to talk, I'm all ears.
Great. Yeah. So in closing, you guys, you know, in summation, the whole point here is that you got to keep your eye on the prize, staying humble throughout the journey and the process, and ultimately sticking through for long term. And you never know where life's going to take you. And I think Joe has done a great job at staying open-minded. And ultimately, even in the midst of all of the changes that had occurred around him, most people would quit. Most people would be swayed and be scared. But you ran through it head first, and you held your head up high, and you really executed. And you're now a co-owner of a great brand and a great company that's providing gym equipment to gym goers all over and helping them execute their lifts properly. And you're also spreading a great message along the way. And I can't thank you enough for that, because this is an industry where there's a lot of fallacies and there's a lot of bad role models. And it's important for people like you and I to be able to clear that fog of war, so to speak.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, I know I didn't really kind of specify on the brand, but you know, if you guys ever do need any kind of gym equipment, you know, we literally have everything from top to bottom, you know, and we'll beat anybody's price tag. So I'll make sure of that. But you know, we range anything from belts to knee sleeves, freaking wrist wraps, lifting straps, apparel.
I know you guys literally have it all, and I can't wait to check out more of your products and you know, get some knee wraps myself here. But in closing, I thank you so much, Joe, for coming on to the show today. I appreciate your word, and I appreciate you sharing your experiences with us. I hope to get you on again sometime, and we can go more in depth about your weightlifting adventures and your journey there, and to be able to talk about some of your training philosophies and pick your brain about that.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, I'm all for it. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, totally, man. So you guys can find Joe on those social media handles. And remember to use the promo code when you're looking to save 20% on your next purchase from olympiadagear.com. Until next time, this has been episode 12 with Mr. Joe Andrade. And I am so excited to be able to bring another episode to you very soon and continue this journey of helping you empower yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, aspire to inspire. Have a good one, Joe.
All right, have a good night.